This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
So if you don't talk about climate change, and the segment never did, then you kind of miss the big picture, which is, geez, the government better be spending money. We're only spending a drop in the bucket, as I'm sure you know, compared to the seriousness of the problem.
If you watched last weekend's 60 Minutes piece on the so-called clean tech crash, you might have taken a moment to check the channel and make sure you weren't watching Fox News. The story focuses almost exclusively on failed companies that have received government support with no coverage of clean technology successes, no information on the success-failure ratio of other venture capital investments, and no mention of all the taxpayer money that goes to support traditional polluting energy technology. Instead, the venture is depicted as an unmitigated fiasco and an embarrassing folly on the part of President Obama. This most recent episode of the popular CBS News show has been widely criticized as having a Fox Newsy flavor. It's not entirely surprising when you consider that the current president of CBS News spent about 15 years at Fox News. My guests today on Sea Change Radio are Joe Rome of Climate Progress, and formerly of the U.S. Department of Energy, and Katie Fehrenbacher, a senior writer at GigaOhm. Each of them wrote a response to the 60 Minutes show, and today they offer their takes on how the news giant got it wrong, from interviewing the wrong people, to providing no actual data, to pulling out that old rusty lightning rod, Solyndra. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Joe Rome. He's a fellow at American Progress and is the founding editor of Climate Progress. Joe, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, Alex.
You and I both just watched this 60 Minutes piece about the clean energy segment, and you had a similar reaction to me, but you were in a much better position to attack the 60 Minutes piece than I was. So I wanted you to quickly summarize what 60 Minutes was trying to set forth with this piece.
Sure. The title of the piece was The Clean Tech Crash, and they were trying to argue that somehow clean tech was not succeeding and that the venture capital community had failed and the government had failed. It was a very strange piece because I'm sure as you've reported many times, solar power deployment has gone through the roof. Wind power deployment has gone through the roof, LED lighting has gone through the roof, and electric vehicle sales have been faster than hybrid vehicles entered the marketplace. The only thing that's really been crashing has been the price of components, whether it's PV modules or batteries. Now, obviously, in a world in which the price of key components is dropping sharply. I mean, you know, literally the price of solar panels have dropped 99% in 25 years. Clearly, a lot of companies are going to get in trouble because they're not going to be able to cut costs fast enough. On the other hand, the companies that deploy solar energy are just going to do incredibly well, as many have. So it was a very disappointing show that really seemed to focus on a few high-profile failures without acknowledging that in the business world, there are always failures. The question is, what are the successes doing? So I think it was a very one-sided and misleading report.
And this is not just an article in the Washington Times or a small little blip in the climate change denying movement. This is a pretty big deal. Explain why the 60 Minutes piece is important.
Well, 60 Minutes remains the premier news magazine in the United States, probably the world. And it has, for decades, been cutting edge in informing the public and breaking news. More recently, it's been criticized for kind of pieces, puff pieces on the NSA and on Amazon delivery, drone delivery of packages, which is wildly impractical. It's got a huge audience, and obviously everyone in the media watches it, and so it has impact in that regard. But I think that makes it incumbent on them to really do a better job of getting to the bottom of stories.
It seemed really based on anecdotal evidence, and the piece provided really no data. And one of the things that the secret about venture capital is that 3 out of 4 startups fail, and apparently, or 9 out of 10, I forget. There was also a Wall Street Journal. 9 out of 10 venture capital businesses don't succeed. And that's supposed to be a knock somehow on the clean tech sector. But there is no, they don't then say, how does the clean tech sector fare against the rest of the venture capital industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, when I was at the Department of Energy in the 1990s, we were spending a great deal of money on solar and biofuels and wind and electric batteries. We were, you know, hoping that the private sector would start spending money. I mean, that was the whole point. I mean, ironically, the, you know, conservatives and even some in the media said, well, if this is such a great sector, why isn't anyone in the private sector investing in it? Well, so then the private sector did start investing in it and spend a huge amount of money. But as you say, everybody knows that the venture capital community, you know, tends to have a failure rate of 3 out of 4 or 8 or 9 out of 10. So that means if I want to do a story that makes it look like the venture capital community is failing, I could just focus on the failures.
Right. You write in this piece, it's as if 60 Minutes did a profile of the venture firm Kleiner Perkins and focused primarily on its failed investments, with only passing mention of AOL and no mention at all of Amazon.com, Genentech, Sun Microsystems, or Google.
Absolutely. And as I was researching my piece, I found that, in fact, 60 Minutes did do a profile of Kleiner Perkins' co-founder, Tom Perkins, and never mentioned any of the failures and spent a lot of time, as you can imagine, on the huge successes of the venture capital company.
It really had me scratching my head. They also didn't mention the huge amount of energy subsidies that have gone to oil and gas companies for decades, as maybe this was not such a great investment either.
Well, I think, you know, I would say the whole thing wasn't properly framed. I didn't even mention in my article. I mean, the whole point is we know because of climate science that we are going to have to get completely off of fossil fuels over the next several decades, which means we know that clean tech is the inevitable winner in the marketplace. That's the only way we can save humanity from catastrophic warming. So if you don't talk about climate change, and the segment never did, then you kind of miss the big picture, which is, geez, the government better be spending money. We're only spending a drop in the bucket, as I'm sure you know, compared to the seriousness of the problem.
I knew I was in for a hair-raising television watching experience when they first started profiling Vinod Khosla's Kior plant, and they were saying, you know, it makes biofuel out of wood and this is all great. The only problem is it's much more expensive than gasoline. Let's hear a little clip right now.
This goes right into the tank, right? You don't have to build a new infrastructure.
Absolutely.
You make it sound almost, sorry, too good to be true. There must be a downside.
There is no downside.
Well, there is. First off, his clean green gasoline costs much more than what you pay at the pump. And despite hundreds of millions of dollars invested, including $165 million of Khosla's own money, Kior is still in the red, and the manufacturing is so complex, it is riddled with delays.
That makes you want to yell. Like, of course it's much more expensive than gasoline right now. That we have, you know, 100 years of infrastructure producing, taking something from the ground and putting it into our cars. It's, you're not going to just benefit from economies of scale from having a few plants in Mississippi or wherever. It's also kind of odd, I think, as an aside, that Khosla's company, Kior, I don't think they're big recipients of DOE loans, relatively.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the people who was quoted in the show, Robert Rapier, the chief technology officer at Merica, who was quoted on 60 Minutes criticizing Khosla, posted a comment on Climate Progress saying that he had told 60 Minutes in his interview that clean tech is alive and well, and there were a number of successes, and that solar would eventually dominate every other energy source. But that didn't make it into the show.
And Kior is not doing that great right now, but it's one of many that are doing some pretty exciting stuff. If one of these rises and turns into the next ExxonMobil, then we will not be talking about any of these failures, right?
Well, I think, you know, it is easy to focus on the failures. There are always going to be a lot of failures. And when I was at the Department of Energy, when Gingrich took over the Congress and the opponents of clean energy took over and started attacking the clean energy programs, they did the exact same thing. They started talking about the areas that we had failed in, and we issued a report showing that, in fact, a handful of energy efficiency technologies that the department had supported had, in fact, generated many, many billions of dollars in energy savings and had more than paid for the entire cost of the program by far. So absolutely, if you know, it's the same thing. I mean, you know, if you don't count Google, you know, and Sun Microsystems and AOL and you know, Genentech, then I'm sure you can make it look like Kleiner Perkins has you know, lost a lot of money. But that would be crazy to do. I think that, you know, that there's going to be a lot of excitement in many clean tech sectors. But again, there's no question that. From a venture capital perspective, you know, most of the companies are not going to succeed. But again, that was true in the internet sector, obviously. And that was true in the electronics and IT and you name it. Whatever sector they invest in, that's the way it goes. And yet somehow we've managed to end up with this amazing internet and World Wide Web 2.0. And we have wild successes like your Twitters and your Googles. At one point, you may recall that I think it is right to be upset that some of our best technology gets snapped up by China. That would be an interesting story to do. There's a reason for that, and that is, you know, in particular, we have been unable to support technology across the entire life cycle the way other countries have, because conservatives in Congress have been dead set against backing any commercialization. So we often have supported technologies through R&D, and then we walk away from them and other countries pick them up. And I obviously that goes back to things like, you know, the VCR, and obviously we don't even make, you know, TVs anymore, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an interesting story. It's not, but 60 Minutes seemed to be upset that China had created jobs in the United States using our technology.
Right, like that's a terrible thing.
Which seemed very baffling to me, because the whole point was, yes, let's create jobs. In a perfect world, it would be a U.S.-owned company. But as I think everyone knows these days, most companies have become multinational.
The taxpayers have lost a lot of money in the general clean tech area.
Look, we have to take risks, and risks means the risk of losing money. So let me ask you a question. We've been looking for a cure for cancer for a long time. How much money has the U.S. government spent? Billions and billions of dollars. Should we stop looking for a cure for cancer because we haven't found a cure?
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Joe Rome. He's a fellow at American Progress and the founding editor of Climate Progress. That was from the 60 Minutes clean tech piece that just aired on CBS this last Sunday. So you have a pretty exciting project in the works that's coming out in April on Showtime.
The first, I'm very excited, the first ever TV series, 8 one-hour segments a week, currently planned to start April 13th at 10 o'clock on Showtime. The executive producers include James Cameron, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and Jerry Weintraub, as well as several former 60 Minutes producers.
And you're the chief science editor of the project, and it's called Years of Living Dangerously, is that right?
Years of Living Dangerously. You can actually go to yearsoflivingdangerously.com and you will find the trailer for the show.
Joe Rome, thank you so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Well, thanks for having me, Alex.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
I'm joined next on Sea Change Radio by Katie Fehrenbacher. She's a senior writer for GigaOM. Katie, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So we just spoke to Joe Rome about this 60 Minutes piece on climate change, Katie. It seems like it also made your blood boil from an article I read by you. Although your background is more from high tech and business than climate science, like Joe's, of course. Why don't you just tell us your thoughts as you watch the piece?
Well, I've had a slightly different take than Joe Rome did on it. Basically, I thought that they got some things right, but also they got some things wrong as well. I thought one thing that they did right was that they're one of the first mainstream publications to take a close look at what happened with venture capitalists with so-called clean tech. And from a venture capital perspective, I think that there was a very real clean tech crash. So basically what happens, which I think is accurate, described in the 60 Minutes piece, is that the venture capitalists, a lot of those who did do very well off of the internet, investing in the dot-com era, they put a lot of money and very aggressively started investing in a whole range of so-called clean tech companies, clean tech startups. So that could be anything, you know, from an electric car company to a battery company, a biofuel company, energy efficiency software. You know, it's a whole range of things. And so what happened is that it proved over the past 6 years or so that a lot of these investments didn't do well. And there's a variety of reasons for why that happened. One of those is that the typical venture capital timeline is they want to invest in a company. They want the company to mature in maybe 3 to 5 years most, and then they want the company to make an exit. And that's how they make money off of the company. So an exit is the company IPOs, or the company gets sold to a big corporation. So that's how they make their money off of these investments.
So these VCs, venture capital firms, were trying to take their model with internet businesses and transfer it to the clean energy sector, but it required a different template. Is that fair to say?
Correct. Yeah. So the timelines were not the same as the internet investing. Also the amount of money that some of these companies needed wasn't the same. So electric car companies maybe need like $1 billion to actually scale up into a huge corporation. So, you know, Tesla has needed close to that. Fisker was an electric car company that didn't do well, but they raised $1 billion. So, and typically, you know, for an internet company, a lot of them, you know, a large majority of them are not needing to raise, you know, $1 billion to get scale.
And the competition was very different for these internet companies because it was such a young industry. The energy sector has some pretty formidable players to take on.
Right. And another thing is that a lot of these huge energy companies, they're not used to buying companies. So, you know, say Google, right now Google actively buys all these companies. You know, every week you see Apple's buying companies, but not a lot of, you know, oil companies or big car companies, not a lot of these big players are used to that kind of acquisition strategy. So there's not as many exits available also for some of these startups. So there was a variety of reasons why it didn't work out the way that many of these venture capitalists wanted. And as a result, there's been a very real exodus of venture capitalists from the clean tech sector. You know, I know a lot of people who have left, who have either been pushed out or left on their own volition, or have had to switch strategies away. A lot of the venture capital firms, you know, will not put clean tech on their website anymore. They call it sustainability. So there's been a very dramatic move away from clean tech investing in Silicon Valley. So I think that's the 60 Minutes piece actually portrayed that pretty well. The problem with the 60 Minutes piece is that they were overlapping this story of venture capital clean tech investing with the government investments into clean power, which doesn't necessarily have to do with startups at all. So one thing that upset people a lot is that, you know, 2013 had this huge year in terms of solar panel installations and wind farm creation. So there's this massive, you know, industry that people are making a lot of money off of, had this great year last year, and that wasn't really touched on in the 60 Minutes piece. You know, and then there was other things. The 60 Minutes piece looked closely at the taxpayer-funded Department of Energy loan program, which is kind of it's kind of an old story. Like, this happened a couple years ago. There's been a lot of coverage of, you know, the big mistakes that were in that portfolio. So Solyndra was a solar panel company that was, you know, obviously a massive mistake, and Fisker is the electric car company that went bankrupt that also had a loan from the Department of Energy. So there's been clear mistakes, but that story has been told many times over. And I think they were using that as kind of a main piece connecting, you know, Silicon Valley and U.S. government support of the clean power sector. So I thought it got very convoluted, and it didn't really portray an accurate picture of what's going on in terms of clean power in the U.S.
So let's take a listen.
So is clean tech dead?
There are parts of it that I would say are on life support right now.
So right after that, they cut to a screenshot of all those headlines, and one of them was yours that read, "Clean tech is dead like the internet in 2000. I don't think they saw the irony or proofread it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that it's difficult to create a piece like this for 60 Minutes, to create a, 15-minute or 20-minute video piece that is for a very mainstream audience that hasn't been following any of these things, that maybe doesn't know what venture capital is, that maybe, you know, doesn't know how the loan program worked. So I think it's really difficult to create a very mainstream, palatable video piece about something so complex. So I don't know, maybe it needed like a much longer segment, or maybe, you know, I'm not really sure how they could have fixed it. Maybe just made it about the venture capital angle. So, I mean, I think that it made me angry in some parts, but I definitely sympathize with the producers too.
I feel my body. Look here, girl, if your man ain't treating you right, come on up and call on old Dan. I'll rock 'em, roll 'em all night long. I'm a 60-minute man. Yes, sir, I am.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/SeaChangeRadio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm joined by Katie Fehrenbacher. She's a senior writer at GigaOM. Katie, maybe you can clarify this term clean tech for our listeners. As it became a hot segment, the umbrella just continued to widen to include just about every new, more efficient product, it seems. And now that's shrinking.
Yeah, it's a term that was created maybe a decade ago or so, and it was actually created as an asset class, so something that investors wanted to invest in. It wasn't something that, you know, kind of organically grew out of, you know, people talking about sustainability or anything like that. It was a way to describe all these different types of companies that people wanted to invest in. So what's happened is that clean tech has, it's been so kind of broad and convoluted that it just hasn't really served its purpose very well. So, you know, clean tech companies could be anything from, you know, electric cars to biofuels to, you know, a website or software that, you know, has something to do with energy. So it's this like huge range of companies that it's really difficult for the investor to have knowledge about all these different types of areas, you know, from chemistry to, you know, digital to bio to, you know, there's all these different things you need to know about these sectors. So basically clean tech hasn't really served anyone that well. And I think that's why it's become this kind of dirty word in Silicon Valley, because it hasn't been able to produce these types of returns that the investors wanted.
But did 60 Minutes get this right at all when you consider what an amorphous term clean tech is, and also when you consider that they offered no real data in the piece? For example, do clean tech startups fail more frequently than other VC startups?
Yeah, I think they probably could have done a better job if they had spent more time on just that aspect. There's lots of data out there to support that story. So I guess maybe what I'm saying they got that right is that that is true. that's an accurate statement. And I think that's a story worthy of telling.
But they didn't tell it.
Yeah, they probably should have done a better, if they had done the, like we said, if they'd done the entire piece on just the clean tech crash in Silicon Valley, I think that would have been pretty interesting.
But if you were a 60 Minutes viewer who didn't follow environmental issues and wasn't even familiar with a term like clean tech, what would your takeaway have been from watching this segment, Katie?
I would be confused. I would get the impression that, you know, solar power wasn't a huge factor in 2013. I would be confused about the terms, and I would be confused about kind of what the narrative was.
So in 2011, David Rhodes was made president of CBS News, and Rhodes came from Fox News. The mentioning in the 60 Minutes piece of Solyndra repeatedly and the issue of government waste and trying to draw the ire over wasted taxpayers' money on this clean energy, quote-unquote, boondoggle, seemed to echo a lot of Fox News talking points to me.
Yeah, I mean, the Solyndra thing kind of boggles my mind that people are still talking about that. You know, it was 2.5 years ago. It bankrupt in summer of 2011. And, you know, it wasn't doing well for another 2 years before that. So it kind of boggles my mind that people are kind of still so obsessed with the Solyndra story. I think maybe it's the one of the only ways that they know about solar, you know, so they hear Solyndra and they're like, oh, wasn't that a solar company? And then they think all the solar companies are not doing well. So it's just kind of crazy that that company has gotten so famous and has been kind of the poster child of clean tech, but also just clean energy, when it was this small company that was clearly a mistake that, you know, happened a couple years ago. And now, you know, like nobody will let it go. It's shocking.
She's a senior writer at GigaOhm, Katie Fehrenbacher. Katie, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by the Budos Band, Steely Dan, and Rufus Thomas.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.